This episode is sponsored by Meltwater. Today, 43% of internet users rely on social media to do their homework on new brands. That's according to the 2023 Global Digital Report presented by Meltwater and We Are Social. Is your social media strategy helping you meet your audiences on the right channels at the right time? Make sure it is with Meltwater's suite of data-rich social and media intelligence solutions. Over 27,000 companies use Meltwater to understand and engage their audiences so they can break through the marketing noise. Head to meltwater.com after the episode. Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Meltwater. This is the Friday show that has strong feelings about olives for some reason. Victoria, who edits the show, I'm looking at you. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson. In today's show, are consumers reaching breaking point?
You know, what are the perks? Are they new perks, or is the platform taking a feature that users have had access to for free and forcing them to pay to keep it? And then, of course, are the perks worth the price? And for some consumers, their ceiling is the floor.
The disconnect between what customers want and what businesses think they want.
If you don't have navigation simplified, if you don't have load time simplified, if you don't have the most basic foundational things done right, consumers are just not going to be happy and they're going to go somewhere else.
Is same-day delivery the new standard?
So Amazon knows that delivery is the cornerstone of Prime, and staying ahead of the curve is crucial in retaining membership, especially as they go to compete with services like Walmart Plus, which are gaining prominence.
Ads depicting women more frequently in domestic roles, Subway plans an electric car charging oasis, and some facts about weddings. Join me for this episode. We have three people. Let's meet them. We start with our Vice President of Content, who heads up our retail and e-commerce practice. Based out of New York, it's Susie David Canyon.
Hi, everyone.
We're also joined by one of our senior analysts on that very team, retail and e-commerce. You know him as Blake Droche.
Hello, everyone.
And finally, we have one of our senior analysts on the digital advertising and media team based out of Virginia. It's Evelyn Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
All right, folks, what do we have in store for you today? Three segments as per usual. We start with the story of the week. We start with the question of whether consumers are reaching breaking point. We then move to the game of the week, where our contestants go head to head to head, give us the best takes they can from each of the four stories we have for you. We then move to dinner party data, where we tell you about some random trivia that we've recently learned. But we start, of course, with the story of the week. We're talking consumer health. Consumers reaching breaking points as corporations test their limits, writes Emily Stewart of Vox. Folks were once spending their way through a tough economy and record inflation using stimulus checks, boosted unemployment insurance, and savings built up during the pandemic. Companies initially increased prices to offset their own rising costs, but may have more recently taken advantage of the inflationary moment to raise prices and increase their profit margins to their highest level in decades, Ms. Stewart continues, but they may have pushed too far as that extra pandemic cash dwindles, household debt rises, and delinquency rates on credit cards and auto loans creep back up. Susie, I'll start with you. Ms. Stewart of Vox was saying that consumers are reaching breaking point. What's your take on where consumers are at the moment with regards to the article she wrote and then the Economist piece and the Axios piece that I also sent you?
I couldn't have said it in a better way than how she was expressing it. And it's basically, there's this weird dichotomy happening, right? Like, everybody is worried about their personal finances. But at the same time, if you live in a big city, you might have a tough time getting a reservation at a restaurant. And so there is this weird tension that's happening, but the pendulum is starting to swing in the disfavor of the consumer because of all the things you just said around the savings rates are going down, but credit card usage is going up, and as the interest rate continues to go up, and never mind what just happened in the banking system. And that is going to have a very negative impact on consumer confidence, I think, especially smaller businesses who have big payrolls that they're trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there is this point where we have gotten to around also price elasticity and or inelasticity, where there was a moment in time where consumers were really open to price increases. And now they're like, wait a second, if you're going to keep charging me more for Kraft macaroni and cheese, I'm going to go to a different option, a private label potentially option, so that I can get more for my money. Like, there's only so much you can ask for.
Well, there was a mention in the article about Kraft Heinz saying they push consumers too far. They said they won't push prices up anymore this year, but they increased them by 15% last year. Inflation last year was just 6.5. I say just, it's high, but it's not 15, which is where the prices went up to for Kraft Heinz. And so it does seem like folks do have a limit, and maybe we're approaching that limit. People were spending more than they had coming in. The Economist was noting last year consumer spending shot up even as real disposable incomes fell over 6%. But now consumers are showing less of an affinity for spending. In February, these numbers just coming out, discretionary retail sales fell 4% according to Circana, and retail sales fell 0.4% in that same month in February according to the Commerce Department. Blake, Morgan Stanley expects retail sales to weaken in the months ahead, noting the pandemic era food stamp program recently expired as well. What's your take on where consumers are, particularly from a retail angle?
Yeah, I think, you know, consumers have been willing to spend throughout this period of the last couple of months, even as they've noticed prices get higher across the board. And, you know, retail sales year over year are still up for the first 2 months of the year. And I think that, you know, that reflects on consumers', you know, ability to, you know, continue spending. But even as they might have a negative impression of where the economy is going. But I think that there are certainly the, you know, practical considerations that consumers make. But a lot of it is the underlying is kind of the psychological factors that contribute to how people spend their money. And I think what we've seen really over the last week with the banks, even though it doesn't, you know, affect the majority of consumers, it's really only one incident that, you know, started off as isolated. It is now, we're now seeing sort of a little bit of a domino effect or a tremor from it. But things like this get in the news, and that can really, you know, have an impact on how consumers, you know, choose to spend their money. And sometimes it's as great of an impact as what their financial statements actually look like. So I think that, you know, what we've learned this year and in the last week is that, you know, things really can change drastically in terms of, you know, how people feel about the economy and their financial situation and how they choose to act on it. So to answer your question, I think in the coming months, even though, yes, retail has been, you know, basically staying flat in terms of people spending for the beginning of the year, I do think that, you know, in the coming months, we likely will see a little bit of a pullback in spending if, you know, certainly as if, you know, we you know, continue to hear stories in the news, such as, you know, what's been happening the last, you know, week or so with these banks.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, like I was saying about the news, things like inflation is coming down, the supply chain snafus are coming to an end, commodity prices are coming down, makes consumers wonder, why are these CPG companies charging us even more now? Like, what right do they have to charge us more? And then you throw on the Walmart news, right? So Walmart had a great year, but they're forecasting that their next current year, the 2023 year, is not going to be great. And it's going to be down 5 percentage points to last year is their forecast. So when a company that's doing really well, that all eyes are on, thinks that they're not going to perform quite as well, that too, as Blake is saying, is going to have a psychological potential impact on people and where they're shopping and what they're doing.
I thought it was also interesting, you talked about prices are coming down, why am I still paying a lot at this place or at that place? Katie Thomas, who leads the Kearney Consumer Institute, she was saying she's hearing retailers are pushing back on price increases from manufacturers because they get blamed by the consumer, saying people don't get mad at Procter & Gamble because of the price of their Pantene shampoo goes up. They get mad at Walmart. So where those consumers place blame, I think, is also interesting, going back to, you know, what Blake was saying about perception being reality for the consumer. Evelyn, we've mentioned some of these metrics that are going in the wrong direction. Some of them are going in the right direction that Susie mentioned. But as Ms. Stewart notes from Vox, household debt is up, hitting a record $17 trillion in Q4. Excess savings peaked above $2 trillion in 2021 and started to fall as government stimulus ran out. things got back to normal. Goldman Sachs, they think households have spent a third of their excess savings and will have spent another third by the end of this year. That was noted in The Economist. When it comes to the consumer, what are you paying most attention to at the moment?
So I think something like an interesting parallel trend that's happening is all of these new subscription offerings that are coming from, you know, online platforms, big online platforms like Meta, like Twitter. And that this was kind of the premise of the third article that you sent us from Axios. So, you know, as platforms kind of paywall more content or establish paid subscriptions, there will be consumers that spring for that more comprehensive level of access. Which consumers and how many depends on the value exchange. You know, what are the perks? Are they new perks, or is the platform taking a feature that users have had access to for free and forcing them to pay to keep it? And then, of course, are the perks worth the price? And for some consumers, their ceiling is the floor. You know, sometimes it's a matter of principle, but for many, it's just a financial reality. The cheapest option is the only option. So then I think about, you know, what that means for advertising. And it means that consumers and households with higher incomes will get harder and more expensive to reach because they can and will pay to avoid ads. And that's not ideal, but it's, you know, it's kind of a fact of life, right? And this isn't new. It came up in relation to Apple's app tracking transparency policy too. iOS devices are generally more expensive than Android or Samsung devices, and iOS users tend to be more affluent. And now iOS users are less trackable than Android or Samsung users, which makes them harder and more expensive to reach. So we see this playing out time and again. And as inflation continues to be a problem for consumers, especially consumers with lower incomes, this isn't likely to get any better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the piece was interesting because it was noting that consumers are getting squeezed on all fronts, not just on the retail side of things. But as Hope King of Axios was noting, there are social media giants who are starting to charge users for improved account security and support, promising wider public exposure. Dating apps are testing $50 to $500 monthly plans for their most intentioned users. Uber, Lyft, Instacart, DoorDash all launching subscription services. Major news organizations have implemented paywalls. Some of us have may have noticed when we go to look at some news now from a site that we typically go to that we can't, we have to pay for it now. And it's not till you put all these things in one place, you start to note that, as she puts in her headline, the quality of the internet life is coming at a higher price. Similar to everything we were talking the other day about women in leadership roles after Susan Wojcicki leaving YouTube, then you got Sheryl Sandberg, and you start counting and you, oh yeah, actually there are a lot of folks who have left. It's not until you put them all in one place, you really start to notice there's been a kind of a quiet trend happening. Greg Daco, chief economist at EY Parthenon, summed things up pretty well, saying what we're seeing in terms of the health of consumers' balance sheets is that they are rapidly deteriorating. That's where we'll leave that. So we've got time for the story of the week. It's time, of course, for the game of the week. Today's game, What's the Point? Where I read out four stories and have contestants Susie, Blake, and Evelyn tell us what they think is the main takeaway of the story. Okay answers get 1 point. Good answers get two. And answers that leave you with the same feeling as...
Stuffed olives.
No. Not again. Oh, can't talk about olives anymore. Or listen to you guys talking about olives.
At first,
anymore.
I thought you were going to be like, what's the point of playing when we all know Susie's going to win this week?
Definitely not this week. Definitely not most weeks. The same feeling as the promise of walking into a good bakery.
Oh,
yeah,
that's a good one.
Yes, yes. And you're like, I'll take two of everything. Those kinds of answers that get you 3 points. You get 20 seconds to answer before you hear that bell. Run long. It's technical foul, -2 points. Two texts gets you ejected from the game. Whoever has the most points wins. Let's play. We start with round one. Evelyn, businesses think extra features enhance online shopping. Consumers disagree. Notes a survey from CMS company Storyblok. It found a large divide existed between what online businesses think customers want and what they actually need. For example, 65% of people think ease of navigation is most important when using a site, but just 28% of companies prioritize this. 65 for people, 28 for companies. Another example, 77% of businesses say chatbots enhance the customer experience. 77% said that, but only 27% of consumers see a benefit. So Evelyn, businesses and consumers apparently not being on the same page. What's the point?
I've seen this before, where business leaders have the uncanny ability to forget things that as consumers, we all know. You know, sometimes they'll rewrite narratives and jump through a lot of hoops to convince themselves and their teams of a course of action. Privacy is one of those areas. Frequency capping is another one. And this is just one of those instances where business leaders need to remember not to trade in their consumer cap for a professional cap when they're working. Keep the consumer cap on under the professional cap. Be a consumer first, because it is common sense.
Two hats. Trendsetter. Susie, you're up.
So I think the point is you need consumer research. You need to understand what consumers want from their voice and not what you think they want. And this is an age-old issue, right? Every senior leader is looking for the next new big sexy thing, like crypto, right? Or like QR code payment. And I think unless you have the basics right, and that's what we saw in the study, right? If you don't have navigation simplified, if you don't have load time simplified, if you don't have the most basic foundational things done right, consumers are just not going to be happy and they're going to go somewhere else. And we see that in a lot of our benchmarks, right? Where we're asking consumers, what is the most valuable X feature, whatever we've decided to study? And it's never really what you expect. And some of the more basic ones are not the ones that retailers are offering.
Like, people, you know, need to be their own super users on their platforms. And it's really like astonishing sometimes when you see, you know, you encounter a user experience that is so obviously poor that it's not something that is identified and prioritized immediately by the people who work at these platforms. And I think, you know, Susie and Evelyn are exactly right. It's often because senior leadership can become distracted by shiny objects, whether it's, you know, the metaverse or live streaming or ChatGPT and like all of this stuff, you know, if you don't have the basics figured out, is essentially useless, right? Because you can certainly, you know, impress people and, you know, create, you know, fancy new activations. But at the end of the day, if the nuts and bolts don't work, that's really where, you know, you win customers.
Mm-hmm. 2 points apiece going into round two.
We start with
what's the problem now?
No, I just thought we would have intrigue from the beginning.
Did you not think Blake and Evelyn deserve 2 points? Susan?
No, I'm just surprised I got two. That's all, I guess.
Well, you open for three with that answer?
No one thought three. People thought, that's generous, Marcus.
Round two, we start with Susie. Amazon looks to same-day delivery to spur growth, writes Insider Intelligence senior retail analyst Zach Stambor. Amazon is investing heavily in its network of ultra-fast delivery options that let shoppers get their orders within hours of clicking the buy button, according to Sebastian Herrera of the Wall Street Journal. He writes that a central part of Amazon's ultra-fast delivery strategy is its network of warehouses, Amazon calls same-day sites, that are a fraction of the size of Amazon's large fulfillment warehouses, designed to prepare products for immediate delivery. But Susie, Amazon looking to same-day delivery to spur growth, what's the point?
I feel like this is a setup because this should have been a Blake first, but it's cool. I'm okay with not winning. I think.
Wait,
this
why
is,
should this have been a Blake first?
Because this is like what Blake studies day in and day out. But I'm going to go first.
That's why I was
first.
Giving you a chance.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Nice save uh-huh. there. So you know what? I think this is really interesting because Amazon is fooling themselves thinking their like little baby distribution centers are going to be the same as Target's gigantic footprint. I think the fact that they are charging for delivery already in Whole Foods delivery and fresh delivery is a really bad setup. This last mile, quick, efficient delivery is so expensive. And I just don't think Amazon has the chops to do it and to compete with an ever-growing and super cluttered group of companies, so like Targets and Walmarts of the world, but also the delivery systems, the like Ubers and DoorDashes, plus the Shopify style platforms that are also offering this service. I think it's a dud.
Blake.
So I'm not just going to read my quote from this article verbatim because that would be too easy. But I will say for the first time in a long time, Amazon is feeling pressure in the delivery space, said Blake Droesch, eMarketer senior analyst at Insider Intelligence. Quote, Amazon was a pioneer in the next day and same day space. But today, consumers can access these types of delivery speeds from nearly every major retailer. So Amazon knows that delivery is the cornerstone of Prime and staying ahead of the curve is crucial in retaining retaining membership, especially as they go to compete with services like Walmart Plus, which are gaining prominence.
Great answer, Blake. Well played.
Thank you. Thank you. That was totally off the cuff. So I appreciate it, Marcus. Thank you.
I could feel that. I could tell. Yeah.
I think that's just a technical foul. Just shooting from the hip. Sure.
On you? Yeah, I thought about it. Evelyn, you're up.
Oof. Okay. What stuck out to me was that 65% of US consumers check a product's availability on Amazon to see if shipping is faster. To me, that's huge. And shipping is a crucial part of Amazon's identity, right? Free shipping, I think, is really what kind of catapulted Amazon Prime to ubiquity. So even though Amazon isn't really at the cutting edge of the shipping frontier anymore, with Walmart and Target and Instacart having pretty robust same-day capabilities, I mean, 65% of consumers still check Amazon before making a purchase. And that's wild. And it's a good indicator that the groundwork Amazon laid with shipping way back when is still a tailwind now. So.
Plus, we didn't really define what ultra quick shipping is, right? Is that like the 1 hour? Is that like the 3 days? Because if you think about their little distribution centers, it's not only, but it's only 100,000 SKUs. And so they obviously have way more SKUs than that. So there's definitely not everything's going to be ultra fast.
Yeah, but that's interesting though, because it's, you know, what they're trying to do is keep up with, you know, these retailers that gorillas. Are on Instacart and DoorDash because their inventory is rather limited as well, because it's only, you know, what's in the store that it's delivering from.
Mm. Yeah. You don't get extra points, Susie, in case you're wondering. But a few points for me. It's interesting because even though there's like the fastest delivery or the least fastest delivery, there's really the average delivery, which is really important as well. And according to Nielsen IQ data, other retailers are slowly but surely catching up with Amazon in terms of average delivery speed. In 2021, Amazon averaged just over 3 days to everyone else's just over six. And last summer, it was Amazon's 2 days to everyone else's 4.5. Even though there are faster and slower options than that. A second point here was noted in the piece, Target recently investing $100 million to speed up and lower the cost of delivering online orders. Shopify rolling out its own Shop Promise service, guaranteeing next day and 2 day delivery. I thought this was interesting. A recent survey from software company Shippo, finding that people valued up-to-date order information over fast shipping. And I've heard that from a few friends anecdotally as well. Like, I don't need the thing in 10 minutes. I'd like to just know when the thing ships, when can I be home to make sure I get it, and planning for that. Just 10% of shoppers wanted same day or next day delivery. That was down from 18% in 2021. So maybe it's people's idea of convenience really is changing. We moved to round three. Blake just out in front with 5 points. Susie and Evelyn tied on four. However, the first two rounds were retail focused, which is Susie's specialty. So really it's like she's in last place. Round three, we start with Blake. Ads are depicting women more frequently in domestic roles, writes Sarah Karlovich of Marketing Dive, citing a new report from Creative X. It found last year 57% of people in ads are women. Men were cast in professional roles 73% more often than women versus 2021, and 30% more often in leadership roles. The representation of women in professional settings actually fell by over 20% in 2022. Women were cast 46% more often in domestic roles and more often in family settings. But Blake, ads depicting women more frequently in domestic roles, what's the point?
I think, you know, the most alarming statistic that I've found in this article was that there was a 24% drop in women working in the marketing industry between 2021 and 2022. And I think searching for an explanation as to why representation has seemed to take a few steps backwards, that was, you know, one potential reason. But I think that when it comes to representation, I mean, not only is it sort of like is the right thing to do in advertising, but it's always the smart thing to do. You know, people want to see themselves in the ads, or at least that's the idea of it. So if you're not, you know, a representative of what people are actually doing out in the world, then you're going to fail to relate to an audience.
Evelyn.
Happy Women's History Month. I just, you know, it struck me as ironic that all of this information came out and it's Women's History Month.
Yes. Susie.
So I have a completely different perspective in that I found the headline very shocking and the data inside the article also very shocking, but not having read the report, I just didn't understand what is a professional setting. I mean, we see M&M commercials where they're on the at the boardroom, and we see Tide commercials where there are plenty of women and men and other diversity and inclusion folks. And then we have the like dads doing laundry. Remember the one where it's like the little girl with her cape and the dad is like, oh, it's laundry day, but I'm going to let her wear her cape. Like there are so many different sort of roles out there. So I just – it was a bit underwhelming, the article and the study, because I just didn't understand what they were trying to measure. Is it in magazines? Is it on TV? Is it on digital ads? And I really do think, Blake, you're right that 20% drop is alarming. But in today's world, in terms of diversity and inclusion and sensitivity, I can't imagine that because there are less women working in marketing that there isn't representation. So it is – baffling, this study.
Maybe, yeah, I mean, there probably is, but maybe there's that. I thought that was one of the most interesting points that jumped out to me. The number of women working in the study fell, as Blake mentioned, 24% from 2021 to 2022, according to She Runs It. Ms. Karlovich noting that the loss of women workers in the space may be partly responsible for the decreased representation of women in the professional setting across advertising categories. So maybe, yeah, there is still representation, but less.
But what is professional setting? Like that just doesn't even make sense.
Right. Well, this was just in general.
Yeah, it did mention that professional settings overall were used less frequently. Maybe it has something to do with, you know, people weren't at work, but I think that was right, that still didn't you know, make up for, yeah, yeah, it was like particularly just over index. I mean, yeah.
Well, and more people were at work in 2022 than they were in 2021.
Right.
Yeah.
So, right, but at the office.
But at home, right? Yes. Yeah. Like, oh, at the office.
In a office professional setting.
Exactly, exactly. The other thing that jumped out to me was age. When looking at age, ads featuring women aged over 60 grew over 200% year on year. However, the increase went from 0.3% to 0.9%. So in other words, women over 60 are still seen in less than 1% of all ads. All right, let's check the scores going into round four. Double points round four, of course. Blake still ahead, 7. Susie and Evelyn behind on 6. We start with Evelyn. Subway plans electric car charging oasis. With green spaces, bathrooms, and playgrounds, writes Alex Fitzpatrick of Axios. The sandwich giant is partnering with electric vehicle infrastructure startup Gen Z EV Solutions on the plan. Mr. Fitzpatrick notes that Subway plans to start with smaller format fast charging stations at some of its locations this year, with plans to launch the bigger Subway Oasis facility sometime down the road. Ha ha ha, down the road. Evelyn, Subway planning electric car charging oasis, what's the point?
I didn't really have much to say about this until I looked into whether we had an EV adoption forecast and came across a January article from our connectivity and tech briefing that featured a stack that actually made me gasp. To fully transition from gas vehicles to electric vehicles, the US would need 3 times as much lithium as is currently produced globally.
Perfect.
So, I mean, so maybe Subway should invest in the asteroid mining initiatives aiming to procure more sustainable EV mineral sources. I mean, I think that would be just as good of a fit for the brand as EV charging oases.
Yeah. Great research, Evelyn. Susie, I hope you're taking notes there because that was just fantastic job.
Well,
Susie, you're up.
I think I do. You sent us this article and the rendering was very cool. However, did you know that this year Subway put themselves up for sale for $10 billion? They're in 100 countries and they have 370,000 locations. So while, Evelyn, you're 100% right, they are maybe not in the right spot, it is very cool that they're thinking about sustainability, and it's a cool rendering. It's fun. It's inviting. If you think about it, it also takes an extensive amount of time to charge your car, so people can charge their car, eat lunch, hang out, have some good vibes around Subway. But they're clearly not spending their money in the right spot because they were talking about tough economic times, and that's why they were thinking about selling themselves.
Well played, Susie. Blake?
So I think you know, it's true. It takes a long time for an electric vehicle to charge, which seems kind of odd that a quick service restaurant is going to be building out all of these electric vehicle stations, because like how long does it really take to get in and out of Subway? Like that's kind of
the
point, right?
Huh?
And like I understand like trying to like, you know, create like the vibes, but like, I mean, have you been in a Subway shop like recently? Like the vibes are not particularly strong. I would work on fixing the vibes in the rendering of the Oasis looks fantastic.
It does.
I think there's
renderings tend to look
as renderings often do. I think the gap between the rendering of the Oasis and the reality of the Subway station. So that, well, the Subway sandwich shop is, you know, like, I don't know.
I was telling my brother at dinner yesterday, and my brother and his friend, and they were like, oh, we went to Subway on our drive from Canada to the US. And the guy making the Subway was a younger person. You know, there's labor shortage, obviously, we all know. And so he was like, he piled on the ingredients. No wonder they're having a tough time.
This is no way
so
to
much
run a business.
For shrinkflation.
Great point, Blake. And a good enough point to win you the game. 11 points. Forget the drum roll. Woo-hoo! Blake won. 11 points to Blake. Susie and Evelyn were 10 apiece. The quick service point was particularly poignant and astute. So well played to you, Blake. You get the championship belt.
Thank you.
And the last word.
It's an honor to have the championship belt. I will say I've been watching the World Baseball Classic.
Okay.
Some seriously lopsided matchups. Last night I watched the Dominican Republic play Israel, and I watched Mexico play Great Britain. And I got to say, Google Great Britain's uniform, and you'll see how serious they are about the World Baseball Classic. It's literally the lamest uniform that you could ever imagine. It looks like they put like literally zero effort into it. It's like some Times New Roman font that just says Great Britain on it. There's no like all the other these other teams like these like colorful like cool logos and hats, and like they were like, all right, we know that we're only gonna be here for a few games. Let's not spend too much time on the apparel. But yeah, that's my plug. The World Baseball Classic. Fun times.
I didn't even know we had a team. Oh, what a waste of time. Not baseball, but no offense, England, but what are we doing? Maybe focus on soccer first, win there, and then expand. Getting crazy with baseball all of a sudden. All right, anyway, that's what we've got time for the game of the week. Time now for Dinner Party Data. It's the part of the show where we tell you about the most interesting thing that we've learned this week. Blake, go.
So this is some data from YouGov America about the enduring appeal of classic technology. So they polled Americans about, you know, classic technology to find out whether or not they are currently using these different objects or systems. So the number one thing that piece of, you know, classic activity that Americans are still doing are sending letters in the mail. So 55% currently do that. 29% still own a landline phone, 23% mail a postcard, and 22% write with a fountain pen. However, the things that, the technologies and things that Americans are not really doing so much anymore are making a phone call on a rotary dial phone, using a public payphone to make a call, makes sense because there aren't any, or having an account on MySpace, which I'm not sure is MySpace still operating as a website. I thought it wasn't. I thought it was kind of off.
I mean, even if it is, there's six people. All right. Very nice. Any of those that you're doing the most, Blake, or doing the least?
Yeah, a lot. I'm kind of a weirdo in that sense. I do write with a fountain pen. I listen to analog music. Yeah.
Wait, how do you listen to analog music?
CDs and records.
You have a CD player?
Yeah, I do. I still have my whole. I was a freakish CD collector in high school, and I just couldn't part ways with my CD collection. So I still have it.
Well played.
I wish I'd known. I just donated a bunch of CDs. Well,
he probably wouldn't have wanted your music, let's be real.
No, well, Madonna and Duran Duran and I'm going to stop because I don't want to tell about the other
one. No, please. What else you got there in that little collection?
No, that's all I got.
Evelyn.
All right.
Save
everything,
us.
Everything Everywhere All at Once cleaned up at the Oscars on Sunday. And in honor of this spectacular film.
It's good. I haven't seen it, but the trailer looked horrendous.
I agree.
No, it actually is spectacular. I highly recommend.
I should try it first.
And I have some data about bagels. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, like Susie and Marcus, please go watch Everything Everywhere All at Once. Wait, am I the only person who's seen it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Victoria's seen it.
I haven't, not yet.
Okay, well then none of you are going to know what I'm talking about. Anyway,
the listeners
we can still have a conversation about it. We all know bagels. Okay, according to Grubhub, the top bagel flavors in the U.S. as of January 2022 were...
All Dressed.
You already know?
Yeah, All Dressed, whatever that one is called, All Season.
All Dressed. Everything.
All
Everything
Dressed? Bagel?
No, actually, well, I'm going to go from five down to one, or up to one. So number five was Rainbow, which I don't think really is even a bagel flavor, but that's just me. Number four was Asiago.
Oh, that's interesting. Very sophisticated.
Bagel. Number three is Everything.
Oh.
Or All Dressed.
The All Dressed. We call that it's called Dressed on the street.
In Canada, we have All Dressed chips, so that's how I got
of
that.
Of course
Those
you
sound,
do.
They
Ketchup
sound
chips.
Dank, yeah.
What's
okay,
second?
Number two is Cinnamon Raisin.
Ooh.
And number one is Blueberry.
Stop.
What about regular? Plain's not up there?
Plain is not up there.
It's a classic.
There's only three bagels.
People don't consider it a flavor. I don't know.
Talk to us, Blake.
Plain, poppy seed, sesame seed. You don't need any
the
more
end.
Than that.
Moving on.
Garlic.
Garlic's good. No, garlic's good. I'll
take
that.
Let's get that out of there. Let's get that out of there.
And you don't like Asiagos?
I've never had an Asiago bagel.
Me either. It sounds
Seek one out. They are
seek
delicious.
Oh, I'm going to have to do that.
Susie, you're up.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. So today is it's apparently there are religious undertones to the holiday. However, most people know it as a drinking holiday, and it might be one of the bigger drinking holidays. So I did a little bit of research on that because, you know, we need to understand sales. Can you guys guess how much is expected, like from a volume perspective for St. Pat's Day? $6.5 billion, $44 per person. So me too, I thought that was a lot. But then I went and checked. Valentine's Day is $26 billion and Easter is $16 billion. So then it didn't seem so big, but it's still quite big, right? And so as retailers, you really need to understand what people are doing for all the different real or Hallmarky holidays to make sure that you're capturing your fair share of sales.
Yeah.
Marcus, what do British people in America do on St. Patrick's Day?
British people in America.
Yeah.
Avoid it. And most people probably go drinking. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know any British people over here. I've seen none.
There's.
I feel like I'm the only one who's over here, to be honest.
How do you know if you see a British person?
You speak.
Well, you hear.
You hear them speaking perfectly and you go, you see them with a Great Britain baseball shirt on, you go, oh, that's hideous. Take it off. Very nice. All right, I've got one for you. I've got a lot for you, actually, today. Facts about weddings, according to the Knot 2022 Real Weddings Study. So I think I've done one on weddings before when they came out with the last study, but here's some updated numbers for you. There's lots of really interesting stuff in here, so let's see how much we can get through. Number one, it was a record year. 2022 was a record year for weddings in the US. 2.6 million couples got married. That's up from 2.2 million pre-pandemic 2019. Number two, a return to normal. Just 7% of folks said their wedding date was impacted by COVID-19 last year. That's down from 27% who said the same thing in 2021. So from 27 to 7 in terms of folks saying their wedding was impacted by COVID-19, their date, wedding date. Number three, some numbers on engagements. The average engagement length in 2022 was, guesses?
4 months.
13, no, 2022. I'm going to say 14 months.
Blake?
16 months.
Oh, Blake and Evelyn, battleships. Either side of it, 15 months.
Nice.
Most 70% sought parental permission before the proposal. More and more folks feel pressure to plan a unique proposal. A record 23% rely on wedding pros to help with the engagement.
Oh.
Couples spent an average of nearly $6,000 on an engagement ring. 85% went diamond. Some numbers on the planning process. Couples' top challenges during the planning process are Evelyn, who's planning a wedding.
budget.
47%. Yep. And number two?
Guest list. Mm-hmm.
36%. Yep. Spot on.
Yep. Of course.
That was awesome.
Couples, on average, they'll pay for half the wedding cost themselves. 46% of planning was done on a computer. Almost as much, 44% done on a smartphone or tablet. Okay. Some numbers about the wedding. Guest size is down. 14 guests from 2019 to today went from 131 to 117. The wedding party is down from 10 to 8. The share of folks going on a honeymoon, 73%, and having a destination wedding, 18%, is back. They're both back to pre-pandemic levels. The average cost of the ceremony and reception is, guesses?
Average US?
Yep.
I think last time it was like 30, so I want to say it's probably gone up to like, let's say 40.
Yeah, I would have said 45.
30,000.
It's still 30?
It was up $2,000 from 2019.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
From 2019.
In New York, it will run you $60,000 on average. In Phoenix, it will run you $24,000. So there's some discrepancy there. And in terms of cost, the biggest cost is?
Food and drink.
Venue. Food second. Venue's about 40%. It depends how many people you have. But typically, according to like 117 guests, which is the average here, if you times that by how much it costs on average per person, it's venue first. So 40% of the cost is venue. 30% of the cost is food for people. Then photographer, florist, and dress are 9%, 8%, and 7% each.
I thought the food was part of the venue, to be honest with you.
It depends on the venue.
Mm. The venue is our final stat, or penultimate stat. The most popular venue was Banquet Hall, and tied for first, Banquet Hall and Farm Barn Ranch.
Stop.
Which was one category. Yep, then it's historical building, then it's hotel, and then it's country club.
Where do y'all think I'm having my wedding?
A at barn. Marcus, come on. That was nice. It's, barn.
It is a historic farm, so it's kind
is
of...
Is it really?
Yeah.
Duh.
A historical farm?
You're part of the stat.
I am.
Final thing I'll say on this, there were some numbers in terms of what is on the rise, traditions or things that are on the rise and things that are losing momentum. Number one was requesting an unplugged ceremony. No photos and videos.
Yeah.
Then having a signature cocktail. Offering gluten-free options at reception, offering vegan options at reception, and then incorporating a wedding theme. They were the top five most on the rise, the top five most losing momentum. So the bouquet toss was up there. Handing out wedding favors, that's down. Creating a wedding hashtag is down. Having a day after brunch for guests is down. That's a shame. And then wedding party members wearing the same outfit design. Thank goodness that's down.
What about big cakes?
The only reference to cake in the study was the top trends of 2022, and 74% of people said they had a cake cutting ceremony. Mm-hmm. I hate that. You can never see. You're always at the back. You don't know what's going on.
Just serve the cake and make it a big cake.
We could scratch that one. Let's get that one out. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Evelyn.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you to Susie.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to Blake, this week's winner of the Game of the Week.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, and thanks to everyone for listening. Thank you to Kevin for helping us with some of the tech stuff before this very episode. You guys can head to behindthenumbers_podcast for our new behind-the-scenes segment called The James Question. We'll see you guys hopefully on Monday for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Meltwater. Happy weekends.
I want to say... my dog seems to be walking around with a ball and then dropping the ball, and the ball will make a noise while it bounces. So I'm going to be listening for that. I might have to go back a few times, and I don't know how to get her to stop. Sorry.
No trouble.
Give that dog a technical foul.
Oh my God, Evelyn lost. I have a chance.
Still no.